Hello, I'm Tom Weber. Thanks for listening to NPR News here on the radio or online or on our podcast. Coming up, you'll hear from two of the people who were in the room when NAFTA was negotiated. That is later. But first, a conversation with Mary Brainerd, the longtime president and CEO of Health Partners. She recently said she'll retire in June. An interesting time to talk to someone who's been in the health insurance and healthcare business so long. Brainerd also sits on the board of Minnesota Public Radio. She and I spoke on Friday before the healthcare bill was pulled. We discussed her career and her thoughts on the future and about her growing up in St. Paul, going to Catholic school and learning meditation from her mom.
She was a librarian, but also a really advanced thinker. And so she's the person who got me into a meditation practice myself. She encouraged me when I was just starting college to do transcendental meditation. And she also was one of the people that got me interested in mental health. She was a big believer that we had a healthcare system that focused on bodies and could do a much better job of understanding and helping whole people, not just focusing on physical challenges. So she was an advocate for mental health services back at a time when very few people felt that way.
The chicken and egg question is that you originally, and you majored as an undergrad in philosophy.
Yeah.
Did you start in philosophy and get into meditation? Did you get into meditation? How did that happen?
Coincidentally, I went to the university, and you were required at that time to take a philosophy course. And I walked in my first class and was pretty much hooked, and kept finding more and more in the philosophy coursework that was interesting to me, particularly ethics. I was most interested in the ethics kind of paths in philosophy. And of course, my family was like, well, what the heck is she going to do with a philosophy major? Is there a job for somebody who's got a BA in philosophy? And, you know, I've been lucky along the way, and then went back to school, too. But
after you found your next calling, which was also an internship, right?
Yeah, I like a lot of people, I wanted a summer job that had both credits and money, and there was a great opportunity at the Minnesota Department of Health. I was very fortunate. A woman who I'm in touch with today, fantastic healthcare leader, became a friend and mentor, and gave me an opportunity to learn a little bit about public health. And by then, I was hooked on healthcare.
What was it about a summer internship at the Department of Health that changed you and said, I'm hooked, I want to work in healthcare? What was it about that?
Well, I got the chance to help plan the Minnesota Public Health Association conference for the year, because the person whose job that was quit and moved to another state. And so I was not even 21, but I got to meet people across the state that were focused on better health. The theme was healthcare is a right. So actually a timely conversation even today. Mm-hmm. And I got an exposure to some of the terrific work that people were doing and wanted to be part of it.
And so, armed with your philosophy degree,
yeah.
You went back to school.
I did.
To make sure you could be in the job you're in now today.
Yeah, well, I never thought I'd be in the job I'm in now today, but I knew for sure that a philosophy degree wasn't the right credential for healthcare, and I either needed to become a health professional, or and that wasn't a fit for me, or go back and find another credential that would make sense.
When you came out, you went to Blue Cross and Blue Shield, and you were recruited to come to Health Partners right around the time Health Partners became Health Partners, because there had been a merger. So you've been with Health Partners
from the beginning,
from day one.
Yes.
Just reflect on that. That's early 90s. We were talking about Clinton healthcare bill at that time. What a path we've been on. Just reflect on that.
Oh gosh, absolutely. Well, what drew me to Health Partners was I had worked in hospital and clinic and at Blue Cross, and I really wanted to be in an organization that had both healthcare delivery and healthcare financing, because I believed then, as I believe now, that in order to change healthcare, in order to make healthcare better and more affordable, you need both. You need the healthcare delivery system to change itself, and you need healthcare financing that has the right incentives. And having both is important.
And the other way of saying that is it's a health insurance company and you operate clinics and hospitals.
Exactly.
All in one company, which is actually still, as I understand, a pretty unique setup for this country.
It is. There are a few that are like Health Partners. Kaiser Permanente is one. Geisinger is quite similar. So there are some others, but for me, the joy in the work was being able to work on both.
You know, the mantra I'm sure you've heard in life, not just in healthcare, but, you know, there are definitely people who say bigger isn't always better. But how does that fit in this world of healthcare?
Well, you know, it's not just healthcare. I don't think you can think of any element of your life where things haven't gotten bigger, where you aren't thinking of at least regional, if not national brands. Mm-hmm. And that's true in healthcare, too. So I think the challenge is how can you be big and get some of the advantages of scale and at the same time feel small? And it's that feel small that's been a focus of the work that I've wanted to do is, you know, keeping hearts and sense of purpose at the forefront for the people that I work with.
Is there an effort to get an element of transcendental meditation into the work? I mean, I bring it up because I don't see a lot of that. I see a lot of 15-minute appointments, right?
Yeah.
And I don't see the moment where you have to reflect on your day. If you do meditate, and people listening do or don't meditate, you know, that I don't see that reflected in the healthcare I get.
You know, I think that's a fair comment. I do think that healthcare has that rushed feeling for a lot of folks, and it's one of the things it would be good to change. I do think though that health professionals are getting a lot better at helping you see. You know, we're going to be able to help you better with your depression if you're walking. We're going to be able to help you better with your heart disease if you're meditating. You're going to be happier with your back pain if you're doing yoga. So that connection between what you do and how you live your life and your health is clearer, and we're getting better about giving those messages. We actually, as an employer, do sponsor meditation classes, yoga classes in many of our locations. So that part's getting better for our workforce. Don't do as much of that for our patients, although even there, increasingly, patients with Parkinson's disease at Struthers, our Parkinson's Center in the West Metro, involved in a lot of that work.
That gets very complicated on whether hospitals should have a yoga room
exactly
on the recovery floor, or whether my insurance should cover that.
Those
are not figured out answers.
Yes, you are at the crux of the challenge is when we're talking about behaviors that impact health, are those reimbursable insurance events? And I think the answer will be sometimes yes, maybe more than it is now, and often no. Often those are areas where you really are responsible for your own health, and we want you to get support for doing that, but it doesn't mean it's going to be covered by your insurance plan.
Why not?
Well, because if we paid for every time someone wanted to have a massage, we'd bust our healthcare system affordability by week two.
You're leaving at an interesting time
yeah.
for healthcare. First of all, is that why?
Oh, gosh, no.
Okay.
In fact, in some ways, it makes it harder to go because I think the conversations and the decisions that are being made right now are incredibly important, and it's hard not to want to be part of that mm-hmm. going forward. So that isn't why, but it is a really important time.
Mary Brainerd is with me right now, president and CEO of Health Partners, who will be retiring here in June, a longtime CEO of Health Partners. And as I noted here, it's an interesting time to talk to someone in the health insurance and healthcare business. And as a side note, she's also on the board of trustees here for Minnesota Public Radio. As we talk about the future of healthcare and that patient experience, you've been very public about your own patient experience.
Yeah.
Before you became CEO back in 2000, you were diagnosed with breast cancer. Tell me about that.
Well, I couldn't have been more surprised. I still remember how stunned I was, and my husband was out of town at the time. My kids were pretty young. And what I mainly remember is I was so shaken. I literally shook. My hands shook.
Holding the phone, or were you in the doctor's office? Or?
No, I was on the phone and got off, and I remember cutting an apple, and I almost sliced my finger off. So that shock of this can't be cancer associated with me was an eye-opening experience. I think one of the bigger challenges actually for people with getting the news about cancer is, even though so many cancers are treatable now, if not curable, you hear the word cancer in you and you just can't believe it. So I see much more clearly the emotional part. It's as big a challenge in many cases as the physical part of a cancer diagnosis.
One reason is you had no family history, right? That was one
reason to be
shocked.
Right. Pretty young.
The end of the story is that it was 4 long months for you, but it was only 4 months.
Exactly.
And you are now free, cancer-free, and have been since 2000.
Right.
But then you went back to work.
Yep.
How did your work life change, having been a patient in what I presume is your own system?
Yes. What I learned was, to your comment earlier, Tom, about patient experience is, when you've got something wrong with you, every check-in to the doctor's office is a big deal. May not be a big deal to the person checking you in, but to you, it's a huge deal.
If I'm the doctor, you're just number 4 today or number 5.
Well, I think the doctors actually knew it was a big deal to me, but you know, the lab tech, you know, you're just another blood draw.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it's, are you looking at me that way because you know there's something wrong? And so every interaction becomes big. And you really wanted consistency. You want to know all your caregivers are on the same team, recommending the same approaches. And even little inconsistencies would leave you scratching your head or worried or scared.
Like what? The lab tech saying one thing and the doctor saying another?
Or inconsistency in follow-up care. And so I came through that experience thinking, there are ways in which we can better support our patients.
Can you point to things that have happened as your time as CEO that reflect back to that?
Absolutely. The work that we do with care teams, much more a team sport, and many people contribute to that kind of work. But teams talk to each other. They actually work out. Here's what we're going to be recommending for this patient, and everybody on the team is on the same page. And I think it's those kinds of things that build confidence and trust when you can rely on everyone you're dealing with having the same approach to supporting your care. That's a really big thing.
One of the reasons it went so well, quote unquote, for you is because you had a very early screening.
Yeah, for sure. I just thank God that I did. So life-saving.
Do you reflect on the privilege that comes with the ability to get an early screening? I mean, I'm thinking of the working mom with 3 jobs who might feel something or think it might be time, but is never going to make that appointment.
Yeah, and you know, the good thing is that we consciously and deliberately have done some things to reach out in very personalized ways. So today we use big data, if you will, to understand that what motivates me to come in for my mammogram is different than what motivates the woman in the next office here. And we personalize the messages with insight, and we've been able to reduce the number of people who don't get mammograms. And I think coverage of preventive services like mammograms now is different than it was then, in that it doesn't cost you anything to get your mammogram. So lots of things have happened. We make them available when you walk in. So if you're in for a sore throat and we know you need a mammogram, we'll walk you right down the hall to get your mammogram done. So lots of reducing hassle factor, reducing costs, personalizing messages that all lead to better results like mine.
As I recall, when you became CEO, the company did not operate hospitals. Is that right?
That's right.
And now you have 7?
Yes.
Why go into the hospital business?
Yeah, I kind of chuckle when I think about that, because we were approached by what was then St. Paul Ramsey Medical Center. So it had been a county hospital.
Like HCMC,
like
still
HCMC,
is.
Like HCMC.
Yeah.
And then had separated from the county and was independent, not-for-profit. But that board of directors wanted to get connected to an organization that was more closely aligned with patients, and so that had more clinics, that had a health plan. Mm-hmm. This was during the Clinton era. Thought it would be really smart to be more connected with primary care and community, and Thought Health Partners represented that, and was only 45% used. So 55% of the hospital beds were not full.
Really?
Yeah. Isn't that amazing to think about from today's perspective? You almost can't believe
it. Wow. Even as a county-owned, like, that would be the default, I would think.
It was amazing. And back then, frankly, many hospitals were struggling with low occupancy. And so we're like, hey, this could really make sense for us. But we, in retrospect, we didn't know what we were doing. and we learned along the way. And worked really hard. And Regions is a great hospital today. Yeah. But
Ramsey County became Regions for people who don't know the history.
Yep. So really, actually, I'm very proud of the work that I've been able to be part of at Regions. And we have a great team at Regions. But it's been a journey.
But if that was almost an accident of history that you got into the hospital business, it sounds like it might have been a little bit of an accident. It was an accident of history. Upon reflection, does operating hospitals fit into the idea of blending this care with health insurance?
Yeah, that's a great question. It does fit, in part because still so much of healthcare is hospital-centered. And at the moments in life when your health is most important, those often occur with hospital attached. And incredible way of serving community. So again, to use Regions as an example, Level 1 Trauma Center in the East Metro, incredibly important resource. And so I think it is important, if you're in healthcare, to be connected to hospital.
Why are health insurance rates so high?
Because healthcare is expensive, and we use lots of healthcare services. It's been maybe the biggest frustration of my career is that we still haven't figured out better ways to pay for care, and that the underlying cost structure of healthcare delivery is so high.
Are the current conversations being had in Washington and in St. Paul, frankly, about this addressing the challenge you just described?
No, we're still focused, I think, both at the state and in the federal conversations on getting people access to coverage and figuring out whose pocketbook is going to pay the bill. We aren't yet talking about how do we make the whole thing more affordable. So it might not be your pocketbook that's going to be, you're not going into your wallet to pay for the care, but you are paying for it as a taxpayer. And so it's really that question that we're still focused on. And the underlying cost of healthcare has not been addressed. And you can see it in conversations about pharmaceutical and drug costs. We haven't dealt with that. There's still lots of ways that we use healthcare resources that can be wasteful. Give you a quick example, antibiotic use. You know, we use antibiotics so much in this country that antibiotics are becoming less effective in treating conditions because we've used them so
which
much.
Which actually has a ramification of we might see the day in the not-too-distant future when routine surgeries, you can't go in for a routine surgery because the antibiotics used to kill the germs that get in when your skin is split open won't work.
Exactly.
That's a mind-boggling proposal because it means lifespans start to go back down, Mary.
And it is created by us. It has been created by us and our use of and demand for antibiotics. Opioids. Now everybody's talking about opioid use leading to addiction, but we've overused, overprescribed, and every one of those times, that's an expense in the healthcare system. So there are lots of places where we have opportunity to use the resources smarter, better, resulting in lower costs. And then at the same time, I think there are places we've underinvested in healthcare yet and would hope that the future holds more. And mental health care would be an example of that.
What is Health Partners doing, for example, to regulate itself? Because if this isn't happening in those policy conversations in St. Paul or D.C., what are you doing on antibiotics? What are you doing on opioids?
Yeah. So we've been way up ahead of the public conversation on opioids. Our doctors know how they've prescribed opioids. We're able to look at opioid use. We've reduced it. We know when to use it and when not to use it. And so we've done a lot of work on opioids. We've also been willing, and this is actually more fun to talk about, we've been willing to challenge our own business model. So we've created Virtuel, a little mobile app that you can get treatment for 60 common low acuity conditions. So things like pink eye or acne or sinus infection or urinary tract infection. And our challenge was, how could we out-MinuteClinic? What could we create with our delivery capabilities that would make it easier and lower cost for you than going into the doctor's office? So my two favorites are getting birth control pills on your mobile app. And in some states, actually, that's an over-the-counter medication. And getting first treatment for acne through a mobile app. That's a lot lower cost than going to a dermatologist's office.
So that happens.
Now, in a traditional delivery system, it's a little bit hard to do that because you need doctor visits to generate revenue. And we've said, we think it's better to have the more affordable alternative for our members and patients and challenge our own business model.
One of the arguments that is made in policy circles, I don't know if you agree with this or not, Mary, but why is health insurance so expensive? One answer that's given is because the Affordable Care Act mandated that 10 essential services are covered, including outpatient care, trips to the ER, maternity coverage. There's a lot of coverage on that. Prescription drugs, chronic conditions, lab tests, preventative service, pediatric care. Do you agree with that assessment, that because all policies now have to cover those 10, that's why health insurance is so expensive?
No, I don't agree with that. I think that health insurance is expensive, and actually health care is expensive, regardless of whether or not specific items are covered. I mean, if it's not paid for in your policy, you're going to be paying for it out of pocket, or you're not going to be getting the service at all. And I believe we're better off covering those services and making sure people have access to them.
I don't know if an insurance policy that doesn't cover those 10, I don't know what's left.
I don't know that you can call it insurance.
It sounds pretty crappy, actually. Yeah. It sounds like pretty crappy coverage.
Yeah, it does.
Which I think is what we had before the Affordable Care Act. People were buying policies that they thought covered things that didn't. My understanding is that one of the goals of the ACA was to say, well, let's put these 10 in there. So the people won't be surprised.
Yeah, and actually in Minnesota, we had at the state level some pretty clear coverage requirements in existence even before the Affordable Care Act. In other states, not even at the Minnesota level at all. So making it clear what needs to be covered is one of the elements that I think has been valuable in the Affordable Care Act.
What do you think of policies being debated, both in Washington and St. Paul, I might add, to get rid of essential benefit coverage? Do you support them?
I personally believe that we need to have specific items covered in health insurance policies that are sold at the state and federal level. That's personal belief. I understand that people say, I'm not going to use my chemical dependency coverage. Why do I have to cover it? But it's sort of the point of insurance is to share the risk across a population of people. And any one of us in any given year might not use our coverage. That doesn't mean that we wouldn't want to have it or that it doesn't cost something because we're sharing risk with all the other people who have the coverage.
I thought you were going to use the example of male lawmakers who've noted that they don't use maternity.
Yeah, that's a common one. It's like, I think it takes two to have a baby.
And maybe your mom did. Maybe your mom used that coverage,
exactly.
too.
Exactly.
What about here in Minnesota? There's a couple other. I mean, this is an interesting time for sure because we don't know exactly what's happening at the federal level and the state level. Lawmakers want to pass state policy because, as I've heard, April 1st is an important deadline because a healthcare company, a health insurance part of your company, has to start right now thinking about 2018. What in the heck are your actuaries and accountants and what in that department of your insurance part? Are they just sitting around drinking coffee, waiting? Like, how do you start?
It's really hard. I tell people this is not a time for the faint of heart to be in the health insurance part of the business. And for example, you're right. The timing is right at this time of year, we need to start planning what we're going to be able to offer for the individual market in 2018. And we don't have any data to work with. We're still just getting closure on who signed up for us for 2017. And that's a different and smaller population right. than 2016.
And that hints that rates will still go up next year.
Makes me worry. It makes me worry that given high rates for 2017, mm-hmm. That when we look at who maybe didn't sign up,
right.
that it would be people who would take the risk of not having coverage at all and people who already have severe yeah. health conditions, they're likely to have signed
healthier
up.
People didn't sign up probably.
Yep.
Which means the pool got smaller. And
yep.
so 2018 rates, if nothing else has changed, it seems like 2018 rates are gonna
I'm worried about it. We seriously haven't concluded anything at this point, but I worry about that.
What about other proposals at the state? For example, the Minnesota Care Buy-In. Do you think that's a good idea? The idea here is to add another option to the marketplace, especially in parts of the state where there's only one. And Minnesota Care, highly successful, just let them buy into that on the exchange.
Yeah, I can see why that would be appealing. It would, within a couple of years, likely, though, destroy the ability of private plans to compete. And I'll tell you why. It's because doctors and hospitals are paid Medicaid rates in the Minnesota Care program. Doctors and hospitals are paid regular insurance rates for the individual market. So pretty hard for a health partner's plan in the regular market to compete with a health partner's plan offered through Minnesota Care when the doctors and hospitals are paid 30% less under Minnesota Care.
Which is Medicaid in Minnesota.
Exactly. So it would be a lower cost option, but I think you'd find a lot of doctors and hospitals very concerned about having more and more of the market paid at Medicaid payment rates. In fact, couldn't get by on it, particularly those in the metro area where a high proportion of our patients are already Medicaid and then perhaps many more. So that's a tough one. It's a really tough one.
Is there an avenue in there, though, if you say yes to Minnesota Care buy-in but at a different rate than the current Minnesota Care, couldn't that alleviate that concern?
I think then it takes away the advantage of offering Minnesota Care if you can't offer something that's more affordable. So it's a kind of a conundrum.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, a hot topic of conversation.
For sure. Earlier this year, as you know, there was a relief package passed for Minnesotans, a one-year thing. It was meant to be a one-year thing to say, hey, here's some money back, basically, through your insurance policy because of these sticker shock prices on the
right.
individual market. Another part of that bill included changing decades of state law that had said HMOs must be nonprofit. They are now going to be allowed to be for-profit. Health Partners, as you know, goes back in its previous iterations. It started as a cooperative
right.
in 1958. It describes itself as the largest consumer-governed nonprofit healthcare organization in the nation. Is that going to change?
No. We are rock solid on remaining not-for-profit, and we're rock solid on our belief that consumer governance is different. And it is different. I can mm-hmm. can tell you that the conversation in our boardroom is pretty strong around, gee, if you're starting to make a 4% margin, then that's too much. Need to start getting that back in the hands
as a nonprofit.
As a nonprofit, yeah. Back in the hands of our members with lower rates. So every not-for-profit needs to have a margin to reinvest, but we have a goal of 2-3% is what we shoot for, and I believe that's the right value proposition to defend.
Are you saying that no element of Health Partners will become for-profit? Because you could do the whole thing of doing a for-profit arm.
I think we have a couple of little subsidiaries that are for-profit today, but the whole Health Partners itself will remain not-for-profit.
Given that, you might not care as much about this second aspect of it because I wasn't sure what your ideas were, but there are parties, including the Attorney General, expressing concern that when that was passed, if HMOs can be for-profit, and this has happened in other states, there's concerns about what happens to some of those reserves especially. Health Partners has $900 million in reserves, and there are examples in other states where in the transition, that money, which, by the way, comes in as taxpayer money in a lot of ways through Medicaid reimbursements, et cetera, that money is kind of lost. Those executives get big bonuses, and the AG and other lawmakers are raising concern. Do you share that concern? I know Health Partners isn't going to go for profit, but do you share that concern?
Well, I think anytime a health plan converts to for profit, there's usually a great deal of oversight and involvement of regulators, and I would hope Minnesota regulators would be really smart about that to make sure the value stays in Minnesota.
Well, and that's what's being talked about, because when the bill was passed in January, those protections weren't in there.
Yeah.
There is a proposal to put some of those on the books.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
When we think about the future of healthcare writ large, and you're stepping down, but I'm sure you'll stay interested, what are we missing? What are you worried about that we're not going to grab and talk about in the right way?
So Health Partners, we have a vision statement. And this, it's compelling to me personally. It's health as it could be, affordability as it must be, through relationships built on trust. And we haven't tackled all of those as well as we could and should. We've been working hard on it at Health Partners, but I look at Minnesota and think we're better than most places. I look at Health Partners and I think we've done a lot of things really well. But in our country, health as it could be, we're not there. And a lot of that is not medicine and doctor's offices and hospitals. A lot of that is how do we live our lives? My daughter and her family.
Maybe with some meditation too, right?
Yes, absolutely. My daughter and her family, baby, are living in Shanghai this year. And, you know, you go there and what you find out is, we've exported something to other countries. We've exported our unhealthy lifestyles, and incidence of diabetes, number one chronic illness, is now on the rise in China. It's on the rise in Japan. It's on the rise all over the world. And that is, in many respects, related to lifestyle. So that health as it could be, you know, we're not there in our country. Mm-hmm. Affordability as it must be, we need to figure out better ways of paying doctors and hospitals because we can't afford our healthcare system. And the more that individual consumers and families have to pay part of the bill, the more painfully clear that becomes. And then the built on trust is, it's still a relationship-based business, if you want to use the word business, because healing is a relationship as much as science. So
how do you get past the dismay people have, and frankly then the blaming that people put on both providers and insurance companies, of which you're both,
right,
for these high costs? Well, clearly if my health insurance went up so much this year, Mary Brainerd is off getting rich, right? You know what I mean? Like, you've heard this.
Yep.
How do you get at that?
Well, it's a two-way street. I think part of the problem is we haven't had very good conversation as a country about what we want out of healthcare. And all of us know people say, my knee's bothering me. I need an MRI. And so part of the challenge in affordability is consumer demand, that all of us... Yeah, I start getting an upper respiratory infection, and I want that antibiotic.
Mm-hmm.
I know what my doctor should be giving me. And so there's a dynamic about how, what is affordable? What should our coverage look like? How do we want our doctors paid? That we haven't been willing to step up to in our policy conversation so far, and that's a really important part of it.
Let me get some thoughts on mental health, because this has become such a big focus. Regions Hospital now has its whole kind of wing or center, I don't know how you describe it, but for dedicated to mental health coverage. That seems to be an area where we're still swinging and missing a lot.
Yeah, I think you're right. The governor established a task force last year to look at mental health services in our state, and you know, that really isn't a focus of conversation this legislative session. I'm sorry about that. I hope it will be next legislative session, because we just are not supporting people with more severe mental illness very well. And so we end up with people in an inpatient psychiatric unit when what's really needed is supportive housing and stable living environments for people who have a more severe mental illness, and that's a gap. Doesn't exist to the extent it's needed in the community.
And by the way, one of the 10 essential benefits includes mental health coverage that's being discussed to get rid of.
Yes, I know that.
That goes back to the Wellstone bill of mental health parity.
It does.
We've had mental health parity now for 8-9 years, and it doesn't seem like we have mental health parity yet.
Well, we certainly don't have mental health resources in the community, and I hope that it's not about building more inpatient psychiatric units. I hope it's more about building community-based living and supportive housing and better integration in the community, because that is a big gap.
What happened on that Christmas Eve at Regions?
Oh, that's it touched my heart in a way that I've carried with me ever since. I was on an elevator on Christmas Eve, and another woman got on the elevator, and it was evident that she was experiencing or had experienced a mental illness. And I just said to her, you know, I hope you have a great Christmas, and you know, are you here visiting, just to make elevator conversation? And she said, oh, yeah, I'm here visiting. I am here visiting and celebrating. I'm visiting the people who are the reception staff in the emergency department, because those are the people I'm closest to. And I'm here celebrating because I've lived on my own in an apartment without having to be an inpatient psych patient for a whole year. And she was so happy about that. And to me, it was a great thing to celebrate. And it was so tragic. The people she was going to celebrate with were the people that greet people in the emergency department.
Her best friend was the receptionist at the hospital.
Yep. And it spoke to me about this gap of being able to live supported and helped and connected in a community, and not making the focus be on being admitted to an inpatient psych unit.
So we've talked about a lot of areas where there's pessimism and we don't know what's going to happen. As you leave the job in healthcare and health insurance, why are you optimistic, or are you?
I am optimistic. I think we're doing more than we ever had to support people and offer great care for people who have chronic illness. And that is the challenge of American healthcare, chronic illness care. And I love the results that I see, and I really feel good about the quality of care and the way we're redesigning healthcare and the benefit that brings to patients and families. And I am optimistic that we'll get some of these tougher questions on the table related to American health policy that need to be answered for the future. And I'm hopeful about that, and we'll continue to advocate for that, whether I'm in my current job or not.
Mm-hmm. If there are any state or federal policymakers, lawmakers listening in the middle of all that's going on, what would you say to them?
I would say to them, let's get the rancor out of the conversation and let's start talking about the real issues. Minnesota has a proud history of doing a lot of bipartisan work. How can we get back to that?
We'll see you at the next public health conference. Maybe you can go back to planning them, right?
In your retirement. There we go. That could be fun.
Thanks so much for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you.